You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Backs against the wall. The Rockets were more efficient in Tuesday night's Game 2, shooting nearly 43% on their threes. James Harden was better, going from 9 of 28 to 9 of 19. The officiating was better. Austin Rivers returned from a one-game absence with the stomach flu to post 14 points off the bench on 5 of 8 shooting. So many things went better for the Rockets in Game 2 than Game 1. Potentially these are building blocks, but in the area that counts most, which is the scoreboard, ultimately, the result was very similar. Warriors 115, Rockets 109 in Game 2. And because of that, Houston now faces an 0-2 deficit in the best-of-seven series. And Game 3, which is not until Saturday night in Houston, effectively becomes a must-win. So to talk about that, what we learned from last night, and look forward to what remains and what needs to be done differently as the series shifts back to Houston, that's what we're going to do today here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn to try the service for free. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So as we chat on this Wednesday, May 1st, the Rockets, as mentioned, are now squinting at an 0-2 deficit. I say squinting because James Harden, mentioned him off the top, he scored 29 points on a much more efficient 9 of 19 shooting, also looked to get a bit of a friendlier whistle, even if his free throw attempts did go down between Game 1 and Game 2. You didn't have the landing space issues that were the topic of discussion after Game 1. Well, Harden missed a lot of time in the first half because he got poked in the eye, a loose ball scramble. Draymond Green got him, and by the end of the game, he was struggling to see. He was squinting. He was shading his eyes in the post-game press conference, saying that the lights were bothering him, and yet he still scored 29 in 34 minutes on nearly 50% shooting. James was certainly not the problem. He gave you an MVP-level performance, especially when you adjust to the competition. Andre Iguodala guarding him one-on-one, the length and IQ of guys like Kevin Durant and Draymond Green available to help. This was a really encouraging game from James Harden. Despite the issues, he nearly got the Rockets to the finish line in this one. They trailed throughout, but came within three midway through the fourth quarter. They kept pushing their fight. I thought it was admirable, and yet all it did at the end of the day was remind me how much of a blown opportunity Game 1 was. So in our usual three-part show here at Locked On Rockets, as the show moves along, we'll get to the lowlights. Certainly, Clint Capella, minus 19, again, the worst Rocket in the plus-minus differential. That's a big problem. The depth, other than Austin Rivers, who, as mentioned, had a successful return after missing the first game with the stomach flu. Other than Rivers, off the bench, Mike D'Antoni has zero trust, it seems. Daniel House, Iman Shumpert, Kenneth Faried, all playing 5 minutes or less. Same with Nene. Gerald Green played 11, and that was after Game 1, in which he was minus 16 in just 7 minutes. So outside of Rivers, there's not much in the way of depth. Capella remains an issue. To me, those are the lowlights. We'll talk about them in Segment 2. We'll also look at the bright side, the highlights, which, again, I think that starts with James Harden. What a great showing this was. Regardless of the other issues facing the Rockets, he has been in a bit of a shooting slump, so to see him get going the way he did, make 3 of his 7 threes on top of the 9 of 19 night for 29 points overall, that's something to build on as the Rockets get back to Houston for Saturday's Game 3 and what at this point is a must-win, because no team in NBA history has overcome a 3-0 deficit to win a best-of-seven series, and I highly doubt it's going to start against the Golden State Warriors, probably the most talented team ever assembled. So we'll look ahead in the future segments to individuals. Here off the top, I'm going to look at where the series is beyond just the obvious that Golden State has 2 games and Houston has none, and what we can take from this as the series now shifts to Houston. And I'll look at this through both a glass half empty view and a glass half full. And I'll start with the glass half empty. You now have to beat the Golden State Warriors 4 times out of 5 to win the series. The odds are against you. That is really, really difficult, even with potentially 3 of the next 4 games in Houston. That's why I go back to saying game 1 was such a missed opportunity, because you shot 14 of 47 from the field. James Harden was 9 of 28, although the officiating issues certainly played a role in his lack of efficiency. You didn't have Austin Rivers, and yet it was a tie game with under 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That was very similar to game 4 a year ago, when the Rockets really needed a game, down 2-1 in the series. That was the game at Oracle Arena for the taking, and they found a way to get it. This year, it was even more important, because as opposed to last year when you knew you could fall back on game 5 and game 7 at home, this year you can't. You've got to win at least one on the road. Game 1 was such a perfect opportunity. The Warriors coming off a game 6 on Friday night, a 36-hour turnaround, they were a little fatigued, and the Rockets could not get it done. Many of those issues did get better for Houston in game 2. Harden was a lot better. The officiating was a lot better. Austin Rivers returned, yet the Warriors were better on their end as well. So even though Houston did improve, it wasn't enough to get the win. Now, as an aside, I don't think there's any problem with the officiating strategy. I would say that this was the most reasonable, balanced officiating crew, led by Scott Foster of all people, that I've seen in the last 5 or 6 playoff games between the Rockets and the Warriors. Houston did get a friendlier whistle. So no, I don't think that the strategy, all the talk between game 1 and game 2 had any sort of negative effect. No, it worked. The Rockets got a more balanced game, a friendlier whistle. It just wasn't enough, because even though it was a little bit better, the Warriors are the most talented team ever assembled. And again, led by Kevin Durant, who had 29 points, but also 20 plus from both Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Each of those guys a little better than they were in game 1. Even though the Rockets were better in these other areas, it wasn't enough to actually get them the win. So I don't have any problems with the strategy. However, I do think it reminds you that regardless of what you choose to blame, you can look at the shooting, you can look at Clint Capella, you can look at the officiating, you can look at the absence of Austin Rivers. There are lots of things that you can blame, but the reality is that game 1 was what the Rockets needed. That was the one that was there for the taking. And whatever you want to assign the blame to, that's your prerogative. I'm not going to focus on the officiating that much anymore, unless the Rockets have another game like game 1 where it's just so clearly against them that it ends up costing them a lot of expected points throughout the game. At this point, the Rockets have played the card as far as releasing the receipts, the data from last year's Western Conference Finals, and the NBA's internal grading system. They've done all that they could do, and it did make a difference in game 2. It just wasn't enough. And to me, what I look at is game 1, because that was the one that, to me, so many things, just one of those needed to go right. And the Rockets have the split that they wanted going out to Oakland. They didn't. And even though they played better in game 2, it still wasn't enough to get the win. And the reality is that even though the Rockets were close in both of these games, if you want some optimism, of the 3 games at Oracle Arena last year, only one of them, that game 4 win I referenced, was actually there for the taking in the final 5 minutes. The others, game 3 and game 6, those were long, long over. So the Rockets, they have been more consistently competitive, which I think bodes well. The problem is when you need to win 4 of 5, which Houston does now, even if the games are in your arena, which they will be for 3 of the next 4, assuming the series ultimately goes 6 games, even if you do get advantages like that, what happens if you just have an outlier? For example, game 7 last year, that was at home as well. The Rockets shot 7 of 44 from 3. It happens. Go back to 2015. I think that series, the Western Conference Finals, reminds me an awful lot of this one. The Rockets lost both of the first 2 games at Oakland, but they were both very, very close. Actually, closer than these two. Game 2 went right down to the wire. The Rockets down 2 points with the ball and couldn't get off a shot. And so many said, okay, if they're this close in Oakland, what's going to happen when they get back to Houston? And the Rockets just had a bad game. Harden, I think, shot below 30% in that game 3. The Rockets, as a team, they were lethargic out of the gate. And by the way, that's been another talking point to this series. just like game one and game two, the Rockets lost the first quarter by 9 points. They then outscored Golden State over the final three quarters. But when you dig yourself that kind of a hole against an incredibly talented opponent, maybe the most talented ever, and especially in their gym, then yeah, you make life really hard on yourself. That's another storyline. But as far as comparisons to prior series, yeah, 2015, everyone thought when it went back to Houston that this thing was going to turn because they were playing so well on the road. But then an outlier hit. That, to me, is the glass half empty view, and there's some truth to it, that even though the Rockets have played well, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is going to continue. But the Rockets, based on various effects of playing at home, maybe a friendlier whistle, maybe your role players, you mentioned Daniel House, Iman Shumpert, Gerald Green, those guys off the bench struggling, those are the types who typically play better at home. Yeah, some of those things may happen, but you may not shoot 43% from behind the three-point arc again, as you did in game two. You may not have Harden as laser efficient, because I know 29 points, you'll say this is the MVP of the league. Well, going up against that defense to be that efficient against Andre Iguodala, the help from Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, that's a really good night. So you can't just take that as a baseline. It's not guaranteed that when you get back to Houston, you're going to keep everything that went right in game two, but then all of a sudden get this better version from your role players, perhaps Clint Capella as well. He was a lot better in the home games, the Western Conference Finals a year ago. I think that's going to be the narrative, and unfortunately, it doesn't always play out that way. Sometimes even at home, the breaks, the stars do not align, and that's what the Rockets are going to have to watch for and remind themselves of over the next few days, that nothing is guaranteed. Even though you played relatively well, you didn't get the win in either of these games, and now your margin of error is next to nothing. And that's why the odds are squarely stacked against them in this series, because they'll break it down to one game at a time, and that's the truth. But the reality is that to win the series, you're going to have to win four or five, and unless they win four in a row, you'd have to win a road game seven, and that's really, really hard to do. Not impossible. And when you have James Harden and Chris Paul, I would not write them off, but it's very, very difficult. Now, the glass half full view to me, and I've alluded to this a few times, I don't think the series is as much of a mismatch as the 2-0 standing might make it seem. For starters, these two games were decided by 4 and 6 points. Game one, it was tied when there were 6 to go. Game two, the Rockets were within one possession, 93-90, midway through the fourth quarter. These games were there for the taking. And that's on the road, and that's with all of these problems that we mentioned earlier going on. When they go back home, the role players, and especially Clint Capella, they know a year ago they were much better in Toyota Center than they were at Oracle Arena. So they do have history that they can build on. And as far as being down 2-0, I think a lot of us make too much of the actual series result. And in this case, the Rockets might end up losing this series in 5 games or something like that. I don't know. I'm not going to rule that out. But what I mean by making too much out of the number of games, we discount how much even a 4 or 5 game series can really not be all that different than a 6 or 7 game series. And what I mean by that is, even though the Rockets lost both of these first two games, it doesn't mean that they're uncompetitive. Think back to the Warriors-Clippers series. That went 6 games. I don't think it was close at all. It went 6 games because the Warriors were bored. They blew a 31-point lead because they stopped caring and they started effing around in the second half of game two. And game five, they played no defense whatsoever. Series, you can't just judge them based on who wins and how many games, because really, a bounce here or there can make all the difference. So you have to focus on how you're playing. There are some very competitive 4 or 5 game series where one team wins in a sweep or 4-1, and yet it was very, very close. So if you're the Rockets, if you're a fan, you can't just get boxed in by the fact that it's 2-0. You do have to look beyond who won and who lost. And in this case, Houston has been competitive. That's the upside. For the Rockets, they are not looking at this series as we've got to win 4 in a row or 4 out of 5. They are looking at it as, can we win game 3? And the answer, in my opinion, yes. Now, of course, there can be an outlier, and over the course of 4 or 5 games, that's why I'm skeptical at this point on their ability to win the series. Well, they certainly have the ability, but in terms of will they actually do it? But in terms of game 3, at home, rested with 3 days off before Saturday night's game 3, can they win it? Yes. And if they win that one, can they win Monday at home? Yes, they can. And all of a sudden, if you do that, the series is tied at 2, and we go back to Oracle Arena, where the Rockets, even though they've lost these 2 games, have been very, very competitive. So to me, that's the message that we're going to hear from the Rockets the next few days. It's one game at a time. You don't win four games in one. They just need to win Saturday, because if they don't, if they go down 3-0, it pretty much is over. But the Rockets can win game three. They can get better performances from their depth. They can get better performances out of Clint Capella. And if they do that, then it's 2-1, and they're one game away from tying the series. And I do think they'll be able to draw upon some of their positive experiences against the Warriors from a year ago. One of the areas I think a lot of Houston fans are missing the mark is in trying to compare the start of this year's playoff series against the Warriors to last year. Because really, it's apples and oranges, because the last two, or the first two of last year, were in Houston. The first two of this year were in Golden State. So you can't look at the fact that the Rockets bounced back with a 22-point win in Game 2 and say, wow, why couldn't they do that this year? Well, yeah, it's a lot easier when you are at home. And if you want to complain about something from year to year, it's the fact that because the Rockets started 11-14, they don't have home court advantage. That's a critical margin. We talk about it a lot in the context of a Game 5, a Game 7, a critical game. But beyond that, also early in a series, it's tough for the road team to win both Game 1 and Game 2. And in Game 1 a year ago, the Warriors were actually more dominant in Game 1 at Houston in 2018 than they were in either Game 1 or Game 2 in 2019. They were really good. Durant scored 40+. He was unstoppable. It's just that because the Rockets were at home, they bounced back in Game 2. The Warriors took a bit of a breather, and also some of the role players, the depth really got going, the shooting in Game 2, and the Rockets coasted to a win, and that allowed them to get their feet underneath them and get into the series. But even after that, Game 3, the Rockets ended up losing by 40. They were uncompetitive. That's why I say these first two games, the Rockets were competitive multiple times in Oracle Arena. That's better than a year ago. And then for all the talk about how last year's team is different, you see that from a lot of the more casuals, that this year's Rockets team just isn't the same. And they point out to these slow starts on the road. Actually, Game 4, the one road game the Rockets won at Oracle last year, the Rockets started off down 12-0. They had not scored through the first 5 minutes of the game. So there's a lot of revisionist history. Last year's teams had problems as well. They just ultimately, number one, they overcame them with time. And secondly, in terms of the comparison right now, you're talking about two road games to two home games. So you need to have a longer leash, and let's see what happens when the series shifts back to Houston this weekend. To me, that's the positive angle as you look to last year, the comparisons, and what the Rockets can draw upon. So at the end of the day, I'm optimistic, but I'm realistic. I'm optimistic from the standpoint of, I really don't think this series is all that different than a year ago. In some respects, they've been more competitive when you adjust for the fact that they have been at Oracle Arena. They're losing these games by 4 and 6 points, despite having a lot of correctable flaws. They're now going back to Houston. Do I think they're capable of winning Game 3? Yes. And if they win Game 3, are they capable of winning Game 4? Absolutely. So I don't think the series is over, and there's positive experiences they can draw upon from a year ago. And there's absolutely a path to where they can get back in this series. That's the optimistic side, and I think all of that is true. The realism, as I see it, is that number one, it's unlikely to happen. You're probably going to have an outlier at some point, and with the Rockets having no margin for error at this point, that could end up being the difference. And secondly, even if they end up losing the series in 4 or 5 games, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was that much less competitive than the 7-gamer a year ago. Sometimes the margins in playoff series can be really thin. You can have a bounce take a series that would otherwise go 6 or 7 games and turn it into 4 or 5. And of course, the reverse can happen as well. Through 2 games, I don't think the Rockets have been demonstratively worse. In some areas, they have been better. And there's definitely a case that they can turn it around. But at this point, Game 1 is just staring me and staring us in the face like an enormous missed opportunity. And at some point, the Rockets are going to need to break back. Can they do it? I hope so. I wouldn't write them off. But certainly, Game 3 is a prerequisite. We can talk about a lot of scenarios, a lot of combinations for the Rockets to get 4 games in this series. None of them happen, in my opinion, when they fall down 3-0. So clearly, Saturday is now a must-win. Can they get it? Well, now we've got nearly 72 hours or more than that somehow. Boy, is Game 3 a long way away, so who knows what these two teams will look like. James Harden, Steph Curry each had some minor injuries. Harden mentioned with his eye. Steph Curry dislocated a finger. Guessing those two are really thankful for the layoff. But regardless, by Saturday's Game 3 and the end of it, we'll know whether the Rockets have a chance. That's not going to tell us that they're back in the series. I think you've got to win both in Houston to really feel like this is back to the coin flip that a lot of us hoped it could be before the series. But Game 3, before we can even talk about winning the series, you've got to win Game 3. They can do it. Will they? That's what we'll talk about more in segments 2 and 3 when we look at some of the individuals who have got to play better for the Rockets to ultimately get back into this series. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. But for now, I do want to pause, acknowledge our awesome sponsors over at ZipRecruiter, the folks responsible for bringing you today's show. And you know, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be very easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so that you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now, as we continue our way through our 3 points recap here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. We spent segment one discussing where the series is on a macro level, both the glass half empty view and the glass half full view, as the Rockets now down 0-2 in the series after the 115-109 loss in Tuesday night's game two. Have to figure out how to get back in it with the series shifting back to Houston for Saturday night's game three. We looked in segment one, a bit of an extended segment, at where the series is as a whole, not just the 2-0 deficit, but what it means as the Rockets now to win it, ultimately have to win four of the next five. It's a pretty daunting position to be against a Golden State team with four all-stars and, in my opinion, the most talented NBA roster ever assembled. So Houston is not in a good spot. It's not an impossible spot. We discussed that in segment one. Here in segment two, we're going to look at the players who need to play better. Because even though the Rockets have been competitive in this series, game one, a 4-point loss, game two, a 6-point loss, they clearly have not been good enough. And the far and away lead story from a negative view and what definitely needs to change in order for the Rockets to be competitive is getting more out of Clint Capella. His top line numbers, 14 points, 10 boards, were much better in game two than the 4 points and 6 rebounds he posted in game one. But ultimately, it did not make a difference. His minus 19 was the worst plus-minus of any Houston Rocket that played in Wednesday's Game 2. And through two games, the story of the series has been Clint Capella has been a net negative on the floor. The Rockets are in the 60 minutes of the 96 that he has played. They have a net rating of minus 31. In the 36 minutes that he has been off the floor, they have a net rating of plus 30. So the Rockets have hung in this series because of how well they have played without Clint Capella. But in the minutes, and it's especially the start of games, that's been the big difference, as mentioned a few times, both in our Sunday and Monday shows, and then our show today, recapping game two. The Rockets, game one and game two, they each lost by 9 in the first quarter, Houston did, and then they outscored Golden State the rest of the way. Well, what's the common theme with these slow starts? That's when the starters are playing, the Warriors with their death lineup, Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, and the Warriors are scheming Capella off the floor. And you look at this and you see the Rockets are plus 30 in the minutes that Capella hasn't played. And I think there's going to be some call for the Rockets maybe even benching Clint Capella and starting a tuck wagon lineup with PJ at the five and then someone, be it Austin Rivers, Iman Shumpert, Daniel House, Gerald Green. There's a lot of options that you could turn to as far as throwing in another wing alongside your three guards of Chris Paul, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. And I think Mike D'Antoni will consider that. However, I doubt he goes through with it. And there are a couple of reasons. First, the Western Conference Finals a year ago, Capella's performance largely went as home court went. Game 5, he had 12 and 14. Game 7, he had 20 points, 9 boards, played 37 minutes, made 9 of his 10 shots. He was really good. A lot of it when you have this stylistic clash of the Warriors, the Draymond at the 5, the death lineup, and the Rockets playing a bit more traditional. They did shrink the rebounding deficit from minus 12 in Game 1 to just minus 4 in Game 2. It's tough to beat Golden State at their game. Now, to an extent, Houston did in Game 2. They made 43% from behind the arc, which was a better shooting night than even the Warriors had. However, I don't think that's the sustainable recipe to beating them 4 times out of 7. To some degree, you have to get them out of their comfort zone, and I think that means trusting Clint Capella, certainly the home games, because that's where he was very good a year ago, mentioned Game 5 and Game 7 at Toyota Center when he was a positive difference maker. But even on the road, if it turns into a run-and-gun, basically 3-point festival, the Warriors just have better shooters, and over the series, that's probably going to win out. The Rockets have to do something to make them uncomfortable, and that's what, at least on paper, Clint Capella is supposed to do. Now, I think his decision-making has been a step slow. Perhaps physically, he's still dealing with the after effects of that virus and the upper respiratory infection that he dealt with in Game 1 or Round 1 of the playoffs, Perhaps the 3 days off between Tuesday's Game 2 and Game 3 will help with that. I won't rule it out, but I'd just be a bit surprised if the Rockets ended up benching Capella, because to me, I just don't see the recipe. If the Rockets start PJ Tucker at the 5, it makes them undersized, so a team that's been bad at rebounding most of the year, it would make that an even bigger deal. But beyond that, effectively, if they go small, you're just conceding that you're going to run and gun, and the series is going to go according to who makes more threes, and Golden State just has better shooters than you do. You might win a game or two, especially at home, but it's tough to win the series. At some point, as ugly as it has looked, there's just no recipe for the Rockets to beat the Warriors 4 times out of 7 without getting more from Clint Capella, and they have just got to, in my opinion, work with him and trust that he's going to turn it around. And if he doesn't, the Rockets just don't have the horses to beat the most talented team in NBA history. It really is that simple. So to me, they don't have much of a choice but to trust him and hope that as the series shifts back to Houston, that he'll be in better form and that he'll start to become more confident. As far as what's going on, I mentioned defensively, he's a step slow. Offensively, I think the biggest thing that's going on, his free throws have gone from 65 to 70%, which they were from really December onward, the last, I would say, 3/4 of the Rockets' regular season, to below 50% in the playoffs. And that's a big deal because with Capella making either 0 or 1 of his 2 free throws in most instances, even if there is a potential lob, the Warriors have no fear of being physical and bodying him because they think that he's going to make 1 or less of the 2 free throws. If they feel that he's going to make them, then the odds are that's going to unlock a lot more layers to the Rockets' offense because they're not going to be as willing to disrupt the lob game by fouling if they think that that's going to send him to the line for 2 free throws that he's going to make. So in my opinion, beyond the obvious defensive deficiencies, the switching, the fact that he's not fighting through the screens or tracking on the perimeter as well as he did a year ago, he's always looked to me a touch heavier this year. That's a theme we've seen a lot. Beyond just the defensive issues, though, offensively, I think the free throws are a really big deal because even if you look at Game 2 when he was 4 of 8, and you'll say, okay, if he goes 5 of 8 or 6 of 8, how much does that really change? And in terms of the box score, not that much. We're talking about 1 or 2 points. But what I think it changes in the grand scheme is that if he's making more, then the Warriors are going to be more reluctant to body him and be that physical to send him to the line. And at that point, if they're hesitant, then that's going to open up more options in terms of the lob game. And also, if that becomes a factor, then in theory, the Rockets should end up getting more open 3-point attempts because they have to respect it. Right now, because they feel that Capella can get fouled and make 0 or 1 of his 2, then that allows them to be a lot chippy, the smaller Warriors, and that's what allows them to play that smaller lineup with so much success against the Rockets with Clint Capella. And just from a macro standpoint, beyond just the X's and O's of this series, look, Clint Capella has a $90 million contract. He's making $16 million a year, at least, depending on incentives. The Warriors are the most talented team ever assembled. If the Rockets' third highest player and a fringe all-star throughout the year is going to be a minus 30 in terms of net rating through 2 games, there's not a lot that you can expect the Rockets reasonably to do to counter that. He is occupying too much in terms of regular season minutes. Their salary cap, you can't just expect that, oh, you give his minutes to, what, Gerald Green, Kenneth Faried, maybe, if you wanted to still be quasi-big, Nene, Iman Shumpert, Daniel House. It's not reasonable to go up against the Golden State Warriors and then pull Clint Capella for one of those guys, and all of a sudden things are going to be fixed. No, at that point, even if stylistically it's a better matchup, they're just better than you. They're just more talented. So I don't see that the Rockets have much choice, both from an X's and O's perspective, but also from a macro. When you look at how this team is put together, the Rockets just do not have the talent to beat Golden State unless Clint Capella is playing at a fringe all-star level. From an economic standpoint, from an X's and O's standpoint, that's what Houston is built around. And so in my opinion, they have no choice but to trust him. Now, as far as other guys that were liabilities on Tuesday, because it was far from Clint Capella, it's just he's the clear leading storyline when you have a starter who's minus 30 in net rating through two games. The other thing is off the bench, there's really no one other than Austin Rivers that Mike D'Antoni thinks that he can trust. Now, Rivers scored 14, 5 of 8 shooting, 4 of 6 from 3. Boy, that makes you wonder what could have been in game 1. If he were out there, he missed that with the stomach flu. But aside from Rivers, Gerald Green played 11 minutes, and that's after he was minus 16 in just 7 minutes in game 1. Beyond that, the other guys who went in, Faried, Shumpert, House, Nene, no one played more than 5 minutes. No one is giving you anything that Mike D'Antoni trusts for any significant length of time. With House, he doesn't look ready for the physicality of the playoffs, a bit green and unseasoned. You can tell this is his first playoff run. With Shumpert, he knows how to play physical, but he is just nowhere close on his jumpers. He looks nowhere in the vicinity of the 37% shooter on threes that the Rockets thought they were getting when they traded for him from the Sacramento Kings. Got so many open looks, and he couldn't even hit the broadside of a barn right now. So no matter where the Rockets turn, they are giving up something. And it's a situation where clearly the Rockets have to get better. And the only thing I know to say is that typically role players play better at home. So in terms of the guys at the end of the bench, with Capella, there's a few tweaks that you can make. And, of course, the same adage about playing better at home, when you look at his stat lines from the Western Conference Finals a year ago, applies to him. To the bench, I think it's a very similar story. You just have to hope that those guys bounce back at home and do what role players throughout NBA history do, which is play better and shoot better when they're in their own gym and they're sleeping in their own bed at night. That's all I know to tell you guys. If the Rockets against the Warriors get that level of performance from the bench, they're just not good enough to win. The Warriors are more top-heavy. They have 4 All-Stars. If the Rockets get nothing from Clint Capella, and if the bench effectively makes them a 6- or 7-man rotation, now it's not fair to really say it was that, because combined, 4 or 5 minutes for the likes of Faried, Nene, Shumpert, House, that adds up to nearly 20 overall, so it's still like the Rockets played an 8-man rotation. No one other than Chris Paul played 40 minutes. If the Rockets don't have the depth advantage and they don't have Clint Capella, they're just not good enough. That's the reality. So you have no choice but to trust some of these guys. I like that D'Antoni has a quick hook. If somebody doesn't have it going, then he's willing to give somebody else a look. But regardless, it's a similar story as I see it to Clint Capella. You have no choice but to trust those guys. You can't play Chris Paul and James Harden 45 minutes apiece and think that that's going to be a recipe to win. No, you've got to have more depth. You've got to have Clint Capella as a more traditional center to maybe make the Warriors a bit uncomfortable when they go small and to theoretically have an advantage on the backboards. You've got to trust that those guys will even out. And if they don't, then you're going to lose the series. But the reality is you can't overreact, because if you do, you just don't have the horses. If you pull Clint Capella, or in the case of the struggling bench, if you don't play those guys and you just say that CP3, Harden, Gordon, they're going to have to play 44, 45 minutes each. No, you're not going to win that way, because the Warriors are better and at the moment they're deeper. Mike D'Antoni is just going to have to trust that when the series shifts back to Houston, that these guys are going to bounce back. And if they don't, the Rockets will lose the series. But you know what? I'd say they're definitely going to lose if they make some of the more radical changes in terms of these guys are struggling through 2 games, so let's not play them. No, at some point, you've just got to take a leap of faith. And as the series shifts back to Houston for Saturday's Game 3, in my opinion, the Rockets struggling, that's who the Rockets are going to have to lean on for Saturday's Game 3, because at this point, they just don't have much of a choice. Now, in our third and final segment coming up, we will discuss things that went right in Tuesday night's Game 2, largely James Harden. But for now, I do want to remind you guys that to get this show every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets with the new Himalaya Podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. final thoughts here in our Wednesday show, breaking down game two, the 115-109 loss the Rockets suffered at Oracle Arena on Tuesday evening. I'm Ben DuBose, your host here at Locked On Rockets. I work with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. Series shifts back to Houston beginning Saturday for Game 3. The Rockets are in transit today, flying back from Oakland, and I presume they'll be practicing on Thursday. We'll get more updates then from Mike D'Antoni as far as anything they might shift in terms of their rotation. We looked at the series as a whole in Segment 1, where the Rockets are, after two games, obviously down 2-0 at this point, and what they need to do if they're ultimately going to win it. Segment 2 of our usual 3 points recap, we looked at the lowlights, predominantly the bench and Clint Capela. Here in our third and final segment, we'll look at the highlights, which to me, it starts with James Harden. 29 points, 9 of 19 shooting, only got to the free throw line 9 times. That's down from his 14 in game 1, but he was much more efficient with his jumper. And that's after bleeding from his eye in the first quarter. He was limited to just 34 minutes because he missed a lot of the first half getting treatment. Towards the end of the game, he was struggling with lights. He said post-game that he couldn't even see, yet he shot nearly 50% from the field. Salute to the MVP, even being guarded by Andre Iguodala, the help from Draymond Green, Kevin Durant. James Harden was sensational. Any recipe for the Rockets to get back in this series has to start with James Harden being better, at least from a shooting perspective, than what he was in Game 1, 9 of 28. Now, yes, the officiating had something to do with that, but also Games 3 and 5 of the Utah series, he struggled with his jumper. It's a bad time for him to go cold, so Game 2, it didn't get the Rockets the win, but there's at least something to build on, that James Harden saw the ball go through the net. And that, to me, is the single biggest positive for the Rockets. Any turnaround in this series has to start with the MVP playing like the MVP. And even though they didn't get the win, even though he was limited in minutes with 34 due to his eye situation, I thought what we saw from James in Tuesday's Game 2 was largely very positive. Also, Eric Gordon, he scored just 15 points after 27 in Game 1, but 6 of 13 from the field, 3 of 7. Look, that's close to the guy we've seen the last 2 months of the season. He's still in good form. The variable that I see as tough to project is Chris Paul. Now, the overall stat line, he played 40 minutes. He had 18 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, shot 6 of 14 overall. But a lot of those points, in fact, 10 of them, came, and that's more than half, those came in the fourth quarter, and a lot of it when the Rockets ended up going down 8 with 5 minutes to go, and at that point it felt like the game wasn't over. Actually, the Rockets had the ball down 6 in the final minute. Chris Paul had a 3 that would have cut it to a one-possession game, and he missed it. But the point is, Chris Paul put up a lot of his points in the fourth. He was sitting on single digits through the first three quarters, and it reminds me a lot of Game 1, in which his overall stat line, he scored 17 points, he shot 5 of 9 from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, and a lot of us ask, why isn't he shooting more if he is that efficient? And it's tough to say. From a statistical standpoint, he looks really encouraging. The numbers are such that if you increase the volume, you can say, hey, this guy could easily give you 25, and that's what you need to make a difference in a series where you've lost two games by just 4 and 6 points. What concerns me is the fact that he just does not seem to have that extra gear that he did in the playoffs a year ago. Perhaps it's that he's now 33 years old and in year 14. He's certainly not washed. But perhaps the reason he is not shooting as much as he did a year ago is because he's not confident that he can get the separation as frequently as he did to get the type of looks that he needs to knock them down. That, to me, is the question. It just depends on if you look just statistically. You can say, hey, Chris Paul's been really good this series. You get him more shots. All of a sudden, he can start putting up, you know, 20 and 10, 25 and 10, and that can be all the difference the Rockets need. That might be true. However, the eye test tells me he's just not generating separation against the Warriors quite as well as he did a year ago. And if that's the case, then yeah, it makes last year even more of a missed opportunity because, of course, Game 4 and Game 5, the close games that were there for the taking, he was the guy making the big shots in the second half. He's not been a non-factor, he just hasn't been as transcendent taking over games as he did a year ago. Aside from Chris, James, and Eric, and we went through Capela as a low light, the other two guys that really flashed to me in a good way, PJ Tucker and Austin Rivers, combined for 27 points, 7 of 11 on their threes. And at face value, that's really good. PJ is one of your best defenders every single night, one of the hardest working guys in the league. Austin Rivers, in this series, his quick twitch ability against Steph Curry, that's very important, and you could definitely see his absence in Game 1. The flip side, and it's why I'm so torn on what to think about game two. Yeah, it was really encouraging. The other side is that you had a game in which P.J. Tucker and Austin Rivers shot 7 of 11 on their threes, and it wasn't enough to win. So, again, glass half empty, glass half full. The glass half full take is, look, these guys are feeling good about their jumpers, and on top of James Harden starting to bounce back, you get home, and some of your role players, your depth, Clint Capella, if those play better, and now you have your more veteran types, Austin Rivers and P.J. Tucker, in form. By the way, I think it's becoming crystal clear as far as the offseason, Austin Rivers is a bigger priority for the mid-level exception as far as Rockets on one-year deals that they want to have bird rights to. That's Rivers, Daniel House, and Kenneth Faried. Austin Rivers, even over Daniel House, is the priority. His performance in the playoffs has been a lot better. You can see the fact that he's been there, done that. Whereas House, there's just a certain green effect to him. There's a lot of positives you can take from Austin individually, especially with PJ. The downside is, boy, you have those two shoot 7-11 and you can't get the win. It feels like a missed opportunity. If you could drop those stat lines into game one, or just Austin Rivers' body into game one when he wasn't able to go, then the Rockets probably win that game. Unfortunately, they had bad timing, and now, as stated off the top, the Rockets have their backs against the wall, facing a must-win situation in Saturday's game three. So with that, that's where I'll leave you on this fine Wednesday, May 1st, a new month here at Locked On Rockets. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in, and if you want more content before next episode, we'll try and wrangle up an interview or two before the end of the week. We've got some time off, so we won't have any recaps for a few more days, but we will try to get some outside perspective. These are just my initial thoughts, but here at Locked On Rockets, we do try and get thoughts from around the entire Houston Rockets community as well. So in the days ahead, Thursday, Friday, be on the lookout for that. But if you want more content before then, the best place to interact is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. But if Twitter isn't your thing, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, website LockedOnRockets.com, email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of the program, just as our friends over at ZipRecruiter were today. Remember, go to ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn to try the service for free. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Also, beyond just listening and being receptive to our sponsors, another way that you can help us, subscribe. You can do that on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. With your subscription, you get the benefit of episodes right when they come out, delivered to your inbox, even before I can post them to my aforementioned Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose, and we get the benefit with your subscription and hopefully your 5-star review, hint, hint, those positive reviews really help as well, of looking attractive to potential advertisers, such as ZipRecruiter, and keeping the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, when you get in your car, you can find our most recent episode that way as well by just telling your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. So with the plugs complete, this is where we break on this Wednesday, May 1st. Once again, the unhappy final from Oracle Arena. Warriors 115, Rockets 109. Golden State leads the best of seven series 2-0. Game three, and effectively a must-win situation for the Rockets since no NBA team has ever overcome a 3-0 deficit. Game three, as the Rockets look to get back on the winning track, is Saturday night at Toyota Center, ABC primetime in Houston. For today, this is where we break. As always, thanks so much for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball.